Welcome to the daily VFN Radio Highlights, where we're keeping the conversation light at VFNTV.com. Enjoy.
We have to talk about something that is really just kind of heartbreaking, but yet encouraging. So many different things can impact you. So many different people have such influences if you pay attention in life and kind of hear what's going on. And one of those people that really just encouraged me, encouraged a lot of folks, but in regards to, you know, what we're doing and who we are and in regards to how we're doing some of the things that we're doing is Glenn Beck. Although, you know, Glenn has some pretty wild views and, you know, you don't necessarily agree with everything everybody does or necessarily stands for, but there are some things that they stand for. You think, man, that's great. And, I mean, a voice of, you know, for America as a original tenant of America and standing up for what's right. Well, you know, I didn't know about Glenn, you know, I knew him from a distance in regards to, you know, channel surfing or something when I'm moving from that particular news source he was on at the time to a different news source. And, you know, years ago, and I got a phone call from my spiritual father, Ken Summerall, who is now with the Lord. And he told me, he asked me to come over his house, and we were sitting, and he wanted to show me this guy named Glenn Beck, right? And so, you know, I come, you know, obviously, yes, sir, I'll be here in a minute. And we came, we were listening, and I'm thinking, my goodness, this guy's amazing. But isn't he a Mormon? Right? You know, and if you haven't heard yet, you can go on the VFN Torch, go to VFNTV.com, and you know, we start from scratch in regards to learning instead of just buying into what other people say. You know, what are the beliefs of Mormonism?
Right.
And you know, just because, for example, say you're a teacher, say you had a teacher that taught you how to read, and that teacher is Islamic. Maybe she's in her belief she's, you know, a Muslim, and it's like, but she taught you how to read. I mean, that's part of, it's important to understand that that's how life is. Life happens, and you learn these things, and people just attribute and add to our life, and we're grateful for how they've blessed us and helped us. But one thing, I'm sitting here listening, we were watching this program. At that time, he was on CNN, right? Christian News Network, what's it called? Cable News Network. And we're watching him, and I'm just amazed because at that time there was very little truth being spoken. It was just, you look at the television and what they call news, and you just go, what? You know what? And then you realize, but people are listening to this. And,
right.
And but he was speaking truth. He was speaking truth at that time. This is amazing. And I'm like, you know, with Brother Ken, I'm like, but he's a Mormon. I mean, it's great what he's saying, and because he's talking about Christianity and all that. And I'm thinking, man, this is, and I began to watch him at that point. And that's when he got promoted out of CNN. He got brought into Fox News, and then he was on Fox News, and he just went to this intense, I just loved it because I'm a fire hydrant learner, you know, just pour it at me at 9,000 miles an hour. I'll take it in. And he was teaching me things that I should have paid attention to. And quite often they didn't teach me. In school, he was teaching America about the founding principles and why things were happening and different connectivities and just, you know, broadening our concepts of things and, you know, using a chalkboard to be able to do it. And, but one thing that I noticed over the time that he's just having a conversation. And that's what, you know, that's what we do, just have a conversation. Right. But these other newscasters are like talking heads where they're reading a teleprompter. Some corporate office has told them what to say. And that's just not who, you know, we are.
Right.
But, you know, VFN TV, in regards to VFN TV and data radio program wasn't on the map. Although there was some other form of television going on, it was in on the, as we know, the more like church type situation than that thing. And, but I realized, you know, he's having a conversation. He's just having a conversation. And we begin to pray for the nation and ask God what to do and how to impact the culture in a positive way. And it just seemed like the church was just stuck. I mean, everybody wants to be religious, but they don't want to change the world. They don't want to go into all the world and just frustrated with that. And during a prayer time, as we pray on Mondays, we pray all the time, but there's a community of prayer on Monday. And the Lord just spoke to me about you need to take it to the next level. And you see our logo represents what he said that particular day, but it started with, you know, an app type thing that he led us to get from Tel Aviv. And that whole journey, when God said, do this, even though we had zero knowledge, right? We had zero knowledge about doing this. We had just like all the money in the world. No, we had no funds to be able to do it. But we had a word from God, a rhema word from God. And I told you, I said, listen, Pat, this is what God wants us to do, right? And within 1 week, you know, God just miraculously provided step by step. Within 30 days, we launched from that word, I believe it was. From the 30 days.
That was very quick.
By the time God spoke, we launched. And although it was painful to our bodies and our minds, but we launched. But it was because of watching over the years, watching this man named Glenn Beck have this conversation. It's like, that's normal. I can do all, well, no, I can't, we can't do normal, but we can at least try to be normal. But, you know, it's like, it's just like a normal conversation. And then I started thinking about, you know, that's how I've always, we just, let's talk about this. And then in that, God just shows himself or whatever. And so, you know, I attribute, you know, that helping us in this concept to say, it's okay, you can have a conversation. People do want to have a normal conversation about something. And, but then you watch this intense man that's just like, do. Of course, I'm not intense. Am I intense? I'm not intense.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so I saw somebody kind of intense like me, which is kind of refreshing and wanting to know things. And, but he was operating at just intensity, high intensity. Unlike, I'm not operating in high intensities. Okay. Right. Well, maybe I can high intensity
right now. You're not
right
at the moment. Right. Maybe not, but.
And so, you know, then I'm thinking, like, this is great. But then he gets this diagnosis of macular dystrophy and this vocal paralysis. And I mean, it's, there's times if you talk, you know, and that's what you do. I mean, you got, you can stress your cords and they can shut down. And as a matter of fact, we want to be able to dedicate this program to Glenn talking about his journey, because all of a sudden something hits him physically and it rocks his world. He calls it a pivot point. And this is how you should live your life anyway. I don't live my life like I have tomorrow. You know, you give, do everything you can in case today, in case you don't have tomorrow. So when you do leave the court of this earth and this life, you have no regrets. Most people are thinking they got tomorrow. When I end up doing their funeral tomorrow, they're just like, no, you got today. It's what you had. Today's the day. And so here he was, you know, at this pivot point of getting this physical diagnosis that's basically saying 90% of his brain's going to shut down. His inabilities to be able to function. He's not going to be able to talk. And here he is in the midst of building one of the largest media, quote, empires, unquote, that Google is watching. The president of Google's watching this going, this is the future. And it seems to be all shutting down. As a matter of fact, I want you to hear now. This is Glenn with his wife. He's beginning to, we're going to have to go to a break. When we come back, we want you, I want you to hear Glenn in his own words begin to describe what happened. Here Glenn is, he's talking about, you know, having this conversation about physically what happened and what he's going through. And I think he handled it, I mean, he's, you know, pretty well. I do want to say again that all of his viewpoints and his perspectives, you know, I don't necessarily... totally agree with those, but that's great. You need to have people that don't agree with everything that you're, that you are in your life. So you, they can challenge you in your own beliefs and it makes you stronger with people with different views and all. But in regards to, I think he's accomplished something pretty significant. And he definitely makes you ponder and go, wow, you know, okay, God, you don't owe me an explanation, but this is amazing how he's able to really hear clearly. As a matter of fact, listen to this physical encounter, this journey that's changing everything that he is doing now because of this diagnosis of macular
dystrophy.
Dystrophy and vocal paralysis, and how God, he says, done some pretty amazing things.
And for personal reasons and business reasons and you name it, I have not wanted to open up to you until tonight. But the real reason we have made these changes, the real reason that you are seeing changes in me, is my health. I was told by doctors just this last spring when we moved off the stage that I could no longer work as the way I had been working because it was literally killing me. About 5 years ago, right around the time we met in Washington, D.C. for 828, I had begun to have a string of health issues that, quite honestly, has made me look crazy. And, quite honestly, I have felt crazy because of them. My vocal cord paralysis, my strange eyesight problems, and at first what we believed was just a simply very painful form of neuropathy. While I was at Fox, the pain would get so bad that my camera crew, God bless them, my executive producer, Tiffany, and our director, Sarah, worked out hand signals so they would know when to take the camera off of me. We didn't know at the time what was causing me to feel as though out of nowhere my hands or feet or arms and legs would feel like someone had just crushed them, or set them on fire, or pushed broken glass into my feet. I can't tell you how many nights my wife would sit in the light looking at the bottom of my feet to make sure that there really wasn't any glass in them. At the same time, something else was happening that at first I actually thought was an advantage. I actually worked this one. I thought this was great. And it is the answer to the most frequently asked question of me. How do you do it all? Do you ever sleep? I would always say, oh, yeah, not a lot. The real answer was, no. I could usually sleep maybe 2 to 4 hours a night. The great thing about it was I was never tired. We at a time talked about hiring a nighttime assistant. My daytime assistant would go home, and my nighttime assistant would start at 6 p.m. and work sometimes until 2. That's how much we were working, and I was wearing everyone out. The doctors tell me that up until recently, I hadn't had any even real REM sleep in maybe as long as a decade. I didn't have a dream that I remember, except for one in that decade. And quite honestly, this isn't a symptom that you look to fix. If you have a ton to do, you're like, I don't need sleep. This is great. But the first sign of trouble that I noticed was what I call a time collapse. If we had met before, I couldn't tell you if it was a month ago, a year ago, when we were in high school. I didn't remember. I knew you and I could remember, but I didn't know it was last week. And I then began to lose names and faces, and over time, entire conversations would go away. This is early on. This is maybe 4 years ago, and the doctors told me that it was normal for somebody who was processing as much as I was at the time. They say that it happens to presidents, and even Winston Churchill wrote about it. While the essential facts remain, life becomes fuzzy, and your computing power just spits that stuff out. It doesn't have any extra space on the hard drive. Well, this was happening at the same time that pain was becoming a very big issue for me. They were telling me at the time there was no connection between the two. Then came the macular dystrophy and the vocal cord paralysis, all disconnected, or so they thought. I didn't think they were disconnected. That didn't make sense. I was a healthy guy. We went to doctor after doctor. We even looked into, is somebody poisoning me? What is happening? Every doctor I went to, each had a new finding, and they left me with more questions and no answers. I tried different diets. I tried medications. We moved to a warmer climate. Yes, this is one of the reasons why we moved to Dallas. Some things made it better, but really nothing worked. I think the brightest thing that happened early on, maybe 4 years ago, was finding a specialist in New York, one of the leaders in the field of neuropathy. I went into his office, And I honestly thought I was crazy at the time, because I had this phantom pain, and it was like somebody had just broken my arm, and I swore it was real. And as I told him, expecting him to look at me like I was insane, which I was beginning to believe I was, he told me about a woman that he saw in the hospital the night before. She was flown in to meet with him. She had the same thing. He said that she felt as though she was stepping onto a bed of spikes every time someone would touch her or something touched her skin. Spikes would be driven through her. We actually cried together in his office as he told me this and said how hard it was to examine. He just kept touching her and saying, "I'm so sorry, I have to examine you." Then there was something new that started with me. It was something that was happening to my body. I was going into a seizure-like state. This is me actually coming out of a surgery. I'm not aware at this point. It happens when I do fall asleep. It happens when I wake up in the morning. It sometimes happens during the day. It's most predictable if I'm on an airplane. It's why I don't travel commercially, because, oh, the press would have had a field day with this. Anything with an altitude, I think, over 7,000 feet and pressurization, it causes me to go into a seizure. It also happens after extreme exertion, and it is worse after a performance or a speech or after a show. The staff that has been with me backstage or has flown with me over the last couple of years usually is pulled off to the side and has a quiet talk with my wife before boarding the plane to alert them what's going to happen to me. As sometimes we have found that it is harder on my friends to witness than it is on me. Most afternoons, my hands will start to shake or my hands and feet begin to curl up and I become in a fetal position. And when it gets real bad, my friends just kind of try to uncurl me. It has baffled some of the best doctors in the world. It has frightened me and my family, as we didn't know what was happening. About 18 months ago, I checked into a hospital in New York City for some extensive testing. I had some of the best doctors in the world look at me, from IQ testing, you know, they did crazy tests, testing for seizures, concussions, EEGs, you name it. One of the most frightening points in my life happened during that hospital's stay. I was given a test for that's given to people with traumatic brain injury, TBI. I did so poorly on this test, the doctors shared the results with my wife and didn't focus on them with me. I never wanted to see the results. I knew I was functioning at about the bottom 10%. I knew when I couldn't figure out simple math problems or remember a series of words, I was in real trouble. I was told at the time that I would have somewhere between 5 and 10 years before I would no longer be able to function. I would be like that old man, except I would be 55. We could not figure it out. Something was happening with my brain. Was it stress-related? Maybe it's some rare disorder that began as a child. Something else. Nobody can put their finger on it. But the life of Muhammad Ali and the way he functions was the image that I was left with, without any plan to get better. And things were getting worse quickly. I was told by doctors to go home and take a year off. This is the network that you are building. That won't work. I was told to take a year off and enjoy the days with my children. What I had always assumed my latter days would be like were not so distant anymore. The great thing is, I am married to a great woman, Tanya. Tanya and I never accepted that diagnosis. But we had to find a better answer. And at the same time, we needed to prepare.
You're going to hear the rest of this in just a moment. We're going to make this available to you on the VFN Torch, where you can see you know, Glenn, you know, see this, and it's beautiful. He has a beautiful, very beautiful wife and just gracious. And the story, as he begins to tell, and he's just breaking it down, it just helps you begin to think about, I know some folks that the doctor told them is basically you've used up your life already.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
And their heart, basically, you know, you got this much life in your heart, and you've used it up quicker.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had to put a heart pacer in. Mm-hmm. And the question is, did we use it up for God, or did we use it up? I mean, this life's being, we have so much life.
Mm-hmm.
And we're being poured out, but are we being poured out as a drink offering for God? You know, like Paul was talking about, or are we just being poured out? And it's one thing, you know, in regards to, well, many things, but one is like the mindsets that, you know, Glenn has helped break of what's possible. So much so that the president of Google, who is, you know, inventing all this technology and with people, watched Glenn, and I believe, you know, based on some of the interviews I saw with the president of Google, saying that, you know, you are what we've been wanting to happen, which is basically, you know, we want, like VFN TV and the data radio program, just, mm-hmm. you know, you don't have to have these big conglomerates anymore. You can be your own.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, you know, we've been walking this journey out, and it's like the mindsets. Mm-hmm. And you think about, you know, Todd Bentley and the mindsets that were broken in the Lakeland Revival, mm-hmm. Steve Hill and John Kilpatrick, the mindsets that were broken over, you know, what can be done and how one area can reach the world. You know, the mindsets that have been broken, because our thought life is what, you know, if you can believe what God says and that God can do that in the context, then it's going to happen. And it's like, you know, getting us out of the box. That's one thing Glenn has done, is gotten, helped so many people quickly get out of this box. And also to remember, you know, the nation and who we are and that original intent and mistakes and all, you know, just going out and just letting it happen. And when we get back from this break, you know, we're going to hear the rest of the story when he's sitting down with his wife. For those that are listening, you know that his wife is just sitting there beside him on this couch now. He's walked over and he's going to sit down with her and just supporting him. But as you heard what she's been doing all along, one missionary told me recently, you know, as God's turning him towards the mission field, you know, he says, you know, I'm in this thing, but my wife kind of looks like it as if this is my thing and not her thing.
Mm.
You know, thinking that she needs to have this missionary mindset, you know, and I told him, I said, you know what? You know, you have to remember that your wife, if she's your wife, that's a huge responsibility. And to have a good wife is a precious thing.
Yeah.
You don't need to throw her out in the front lines or something. If she's going to be your wife, that's a treasure thing. Instead of seeing that she has to be what you are,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe God just, you know, wants her to be your wife. And that's going to be very important when you're working and having all that, because you don't want to have somebody who doesn't want to be your wife,
mm-hmm.
that every day you come home and then she's battling with you, that just, you know, you're thinking like, oh my goodness, you know, mm-hmm. and he has a good wife mm-hmm. that would support him in that role as his wife. And that's one thing Tanya, obviously, as you're saying, he was talking about, I mean, here she's, you know, check my feet to see if there's glass on my feet. And that pain, it makes me think about some others that we know that their feet were literally on fire.
Oh yeah.
And going to those things that brought them to a point where, you know, they put them on Oxycontin, cut my feet off, they said, during some cases that we have seen. And they were saying, just stop the pain.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, even one man even took his life under those medications, mm-hmm. and just to stop it and the torment. And yet he stayed faithful and continuing on to do what he feels that he's supposed to be doing. So we're just hearing what has been taking place as pivot point as Glenn Beck talks about his journey, and our hearts are moved about this. And just you think about, you know, Henry Cloud, I believe his book, you know, Integrity, the Courage to Meet the Demands of Reality,
mm-hmm.
and how he's going through all this pain and all this confusion, the shutdown of his body, and he's willing to go, you know, travel knowing that he was going to have these seizures, that the crew around him, they weren't overtaken with, okay, he has these. I mean, look at Paul.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he talks about, I'm glad that my physical ailment did not interfere with your faith. I mean, he's talking, you know, mm-hmm. the gospel of Paul, and not comparing the two, but just understanding how many people, you know, the second you have any physical problems or something's going on, they go like, oh, I guess I can't, you know, and it's like, no, man, you don't, in battle, you mm-hmm. don't do that. Soldier doesn't go, oh, I got a scratch, right? You can't, right?
Can't stop. It makes me think of, I don't know if it was William Booth, but he was in the middle of preaching.
That was
Smith Wigglesworth.
Smith Wigglesworth. And he was passing kidney stones.
Yeah, he would pause his message.
Yeah.
He would go to the hotel room where he probably was at. He would pass the stone and then come back and finish his message. You have people that will change their entire call, you know, because they had to go through something. Yeah. I got to cut and pay, you know, can't do this. Like, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I mean, the push. And so I really admire him for doing this. But he walks over. You can see this on the VFN Torch. Go to VFNTV.com. And but those that are listening on radio, he walks over to this couch. He begins now. He's sitting with Tanya, his wife, and begins to explain to this next season. And just, it's amazing what you're about to hear. As a matter of fact, listen up. Watch.
Found the Carrick Brain Center. I had heard about it from some of my Navy SEAL friends. I had seen them work miracles with people. Honestly, it is a place that you go to if you are absolutely desperate, because they do crazy stuff. Crazy stuff. And I will never forget, Tanya and I were there, and they said, there are people that think we're cowboys. And I said, yes. And they started to explain, well, you know, we're not really cowboys, right? We're not really cowboys. And I'm like, look, dude, I don't need an Ivy League administrator. If you're not a medical cowboy, then I'm in the wrong place. Don't waste my time. They engage in experimental therapy. You know, the stuff the government and the insurance companies aren't sure that they believe in. And because of that, they don't take insurance, and they cost quite a bit of money, and they don't make any promises. But when you're 15 or 20 doctors in and no diagnosis, at least a diagnosis that you feel good about, what do you have to lose? Besides, I wondered, big miracle, what are the odds of me moving from New York City to Dallas, Texas, and buying a studio that was literally 3.5 minutes down the street from the only place in the world that seems to specialize in exactly what was wrong with me. So we went, and after a few short visits, they found that I had several things going on, from an autoimmune disorder to adrenal fatigue, and they found the connection on everything that was going on, and for the first time gave us hope that we could reboot my system, not stop it, but reverse at least parts of it. Everything these guys told us made sense for the first time. Never felt like it made sense. You know, me never having to sleep was now finally understandable. Apparently, the last sign of adrenal failure is a hyperextension of your adrenal gland. So in other words, I didn't need to sleep. I could have been lifting cars during my time at Fox. I wish I would have. That would have made a great episode. But now, because of that, my adrenal system had blown out, and all I could do was sleep. And one thing on top of another, and in the end, my immune system was looking at these natural hormones. It was looking at adrenaline as an infection, and so my body was trying to kill its basic functions. I also looked and appeared at the time to be in the early stages of Addison's disease. That's what JFK had, and it's a complete shutdown of your adrenal glands. Thank goodness. Minor holding on by a thread, but I no longer make cortisol or adrenaline. Yay! Those are pretty important to heal and live and function. And my doctors told me that it was my faith in God that was powering me through all of this, that I shouldn't be standing, that if I would have stayed in New York City, they didn't think I would be alive today. So when the tests were all done, the doctors said to us, called me in, and said they had put all the charts up, right, to everybody. They had put all the charts up, and they said all the doctors and everybody there, name the patient. Name the patient. None of them named me. And they said This should strengthen your faith in God, because when we all looked at these, you should not be able to get out of bed in the morning. You shouldn't be able to function. It was a miracle that I was moving. It was my faith in God. Now, over the last 10 months, I did all kinds of tests and therapies, which included everything from electric stimulation. I think it's electric shock, and I think my wife was enjoying it, to weird gyroscope tests, like what the astronauts used to use, where they're just flipping you around. It's crazy. But after months of treatment and completely changing the way I eat, sleep, work, and live, along with ongoing hormone treatment and intensive physical therapy, I have reversed the process. Some of the physical scars will be with me for the rest of my life. You don't want to be sitting next to me on an airplane. My hands sometimes still shake and I still have problems, but my brain is back online in a big way. It's so remarkable that if we hadn't have lived it, would you have believed it? No. Little did I know, she knew, I didn't. The last day of therapy this summer, I had to take that traumatic brain injury test again. And I broke down at the thought of it, and Tanya was sitting next to me. And I just went into a full-fledged panic attack. I can't take that test again. I can't take it, because it was the most humbling thing that I had ever done. I can't take it again. And she was there, and she held my hand, and she said, "It's going to be okay." This time, the results were in the 90th percentile, and she's there to verify. It would have been higher, but I didn't follow the instructions. And so I have received a clean bill of health. And as the doctors said, I'm not sure how much your staff is going to thank us, because Rush Limbaugh says, doing the show with half my brain tied behind my back. Well, with me, it's actually true. But now it's back online. So the question is, why am I telling you all of this? Because you and I are family. And for us to survive, we need to trust one another. We need to know that we live and die, we toil and we sweat, we suffer, we bleed, and yes, we conquer. Each of us can. When I first spoke of my alcoholic pivot point on the air, it was in the 90s, and I was actually trying to end my career at the time. But it had a strange effect. I actually got to know my audience for the first time. And I realized we're all hiding something. And if we stop hiding something, whether it's physical, mental, or spiritual pain, we begin to realize we're all in this together. Everything I do now has new meaning to me. But more importantly, I'm not going to waste a single second of my life, at least at work. I'd rather be home with my children. But I believe that we're all born for a reason and a purpose. But I've been given a blessing to see how fragile and short life can be. So this week I'm going to be sharing with you some of the changes, because I'm going to change almost everything in my life. They're positive changes based in love and truth and reconciliation. It's not going to be easy. I have 50 years of mistakes I have to change, 50 years of habits I have to change. I want to show you tonight the difference between me saying we should love one another and me now working with the Dream Labs, trying to actually spread that message in a different way. When people were mad at me for thinking I didn't care anymore, they didn't know. You can't blame them. They expected me to be honest. They had the information I gave them. For those who have questioned why I've been saying we need to love one another, why I've apologized on the earth, they didn't know. They didn't know that when you are faced with a real shortened timeline of your life, you begin to measure everything and its worth in a completely different way. When I say, let's not judge one another because we don't know what's happening in someone else's life, maybe now you'll understand it from me. Because we're friends and we don't have any secrets between us. When I say to you, I understand your pain, I understand what you're going through, and I understand how you want to give up, but don't. Life is worth it. Maybe you'll understand that I do get it, and maybe we can help each other. When you're down, I'll be up. When I'm down, you be up.
Wow, what a journey, and to see these things reversed. And, you know, many are the plans in a man's heart, but it's the Lord's plans that prevail, and God loves each of us. Matter of fact, we have a segment, you got to get it. You know, who does God love?
Mm.
If you don't know this, God loves you. God's got a plan for your life. And that was an amazing, amazing journey. And obviously you didn't hear Tanya, for those that are listening on radio, but she just has been a supporter, and you can see her a rock. And you go to VFNTV.com, go to the torch, and you can see the whole segment there. And that was just an amazing journey. So I think about, you know, think about this. And when he's saying, you know, this is why I was doing this, this is why I was doing this, I couldn't explain it to you, but he's saying that this is potentially my last days. My brain went from 100% in operation to 10%, and they don't even know how long that's going to hold on. And, man, if we, that would be really, really, and,
we can't afford to lose any,
you know, things shutting down. And so you just don't even know.
Mm-hmm.
And so he began to live, make decisions based on tomorrow is not promised. And so many people, you know, live their life like you have tomorrow. Mm-hmm. It's like, why don't you just do what's right? I was like, oh, I got tomorrow to do what's right. And I remember a friend of mine that's now has passed and on to be with the Lord, but he was a he was my major, and as I was a deputy, and he was a major at the sheriff's department that I worked at. His name is Adrian Kirksey. His wife is Deanna, and he went to a standard operation where they're going to go work on some arteries with the one in your neck, whatever that's called. And
aorta.
Your neck. The aorta would be here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's right.
Jugular.
Could be the jugular. Wow. That sounds, and so that thing in his neck. And so, and when they're cleaning it up, like this stuff built up on it, that part of it broke off. A little small fragment. We're so fragile. I mean, of all the things, not only you look at the universe, but you look at the human body and how God's created human beings.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, of any pride at all, I'm like, we should say, who do I think I am?
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, God is sustaining life and how things are. And just one little fragment of what you know, built up on your artery can break off and go into your brain. And he had a stroke. And didn't know whether he was going to recover. That was potentially could be it, you know. And then, so he goes through all those processes, you know, kind of similar in this concepts of what, you know, Glenn was talking about. And then he came out of it, and he was able to function and all.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember him coming down to the muster room where all the deputies come together, and you have different shifts, and so that comes in. It's not just the movies; it actually happens in real life. And he stood up, and, you know, deputies are not the most emotional people or sharing their heart.
They're not.
That they may have once, but they won't do it again. No. But here is, you know, Adrian is facing his last potential. He's realizing life is short. It could end at any moment, you know, and how do you feel towards people? The first thing that begins to happen is like, how do I feel towards people? You know, because have I not told people how I feel? And so many people live their life never expressing to someone the positive feelings, what they meant in their life. And it's crazy, but they do this all the time. And people die not knowing how much they meant to you.
Mm-hmm.
And so Adrian comes down to the muster rooms where we're meeting. And when our shift came in, he's talking to us. And that didn't normally happen. The majors didn't come down to do this kind of thing. And standing up in front of deputies to talk, especially being in leadership, is sort of like, you know, a comedian standing up in front of an audience that crashes. I don't know what they call that. What do you call? Hey, what do you call that?
Yeah, improv man. Tell me.
What do you call that when you it bombs or something?
That's a good way to put it.
Okay. Crash and burn.
Crash
and burn. Which is, you know, it's not a good thing to do. I mean, it
Not me trying to be funny.
If you're going to tell some jokes or something and they don't turn out well, you know, at that time, it could be different now. That, you know, the deputies, they had no problem letting you know, that that was just, you know, get out of here. Mm-hmm. What is that? You know, and all whatever.
They heckle them.
Oh, yeah, heckle. Yes. And so.
But he heckled a lot.
He came down.
Are you getting enjoyment out of this?
We're talking about Glenn here.
Yes.
And
important.
And you don't even know if you have tomorrow. You better treat.
I love you, man.
There you go. And so.
I feel it.
So Adrian comes down. It's so beautiful. You know, and I, man, I've always, ever since I met Adrian, you know, years ago at the, at a particular restaurant that he would always go to, him and his wife and his boys, just always thought the world of them. And he's one of the ones that sat at the table that was hired on that day. I got hired by all those folks I told that story about.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one that says, anyway. So anyway, then, so he says, he looks at all these deputies in uniform and he says, I want you to know that I love you. I love you guys. You know, that's a word you did not hear much, you know, in law enforcement. You don't hear that in your office. It was so beautiful because, you know, that he understood now that that's how we should live our life. So he wasn't going to hold back those feelings anymore. And little Adrian, his son, I mean, it took to the last moment of his life and just honored his dad. Just a beautiful relationship the two had. And it's a great example. And I've always thought a lot of his family. And so then, you know, why I live my life. This is how I live my life. It's why people freak out a lot. But I'm assuming I might not see you tomorrow.
Mm.
I'm assuming that, you know, something could happen. And I don't want, you know, your concept of what I think about you
mm-hmm.
being an issue. You know, I won't let you know. Don't worry. You know, this is how I feel about you.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate this and I appreciate that and I love you or whatever it is. Because you don't know. But by the way, as Christians, that's how we should live our life anyway.
Right.
Assuming you have tomorrow to tell your kids that you love them, even if your kids are being a jerk, if they're ever going to get healed, they're going to get better from a father and a mother. This is what they need to hear from you, that you love them. They don't need to, you know, they got to know, even in the midst of all their junk, you know, you love them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not faked up stuff, but, you know, you got to, you know, your feelings towards them. A fellow coworker, you know, people just tell, who cares what people, I mean, it's important the fact that, to realize, just like Glenn did, he began to tell everybody, you know, changed his theme song, you know, to, you know, it's got to be love and people are being critical of it, you know, and saying a lot of complaints about it and all that.
Really?
And
terrible.
I don't want to point at anybody like that. And so... But just, you know, everybody wants to be loved. They're talking about that. But God is love. We should mm-hmm. actually be known for the fact that we love. And so I want to encourage you today. I want to encourage you to think about this because he got, you know, 40 years life potentially back. But he got a chance to reboot and rethink things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why do we have to go through it? Why don't let's just reboot now and just say, you know what, this is a reality. And it makes me think about this in James chapter 4, verse 13 through 17. You know, the Word of God says, now listen. You who say tomorrow or today, we will go to this city or spend a year here or carry on with business or make money. Why do you don't even know if you even have tomorrow?
Mm.
What is your life? You're a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, this is what you ought to say. If it's in the Lord's will, we will live and do this or do that. As it is, you boast in your arrogant schemes.
Mm.
All such boasting is evil. If anyone then knows the good they ought to do and does not do it, then it's sin for them.
Mm.
I'm reading from this new NIV thing.
That's tough.
And so this is how we should live our life every day. This one particular man says, I'm going to build bigger barns. I'm going to do this. And the Lord's going like, you don't even know tomorrow your life's going to be called from you. Every day we should live our life while we don't have tomorrow. And the reason why is it very well could be your last day on earth.
Mm-hmm.
And the moment that we leave this earth, we're going to face love himself. God is love. And we're going to be measured, judged based on did we love? Did we learn to love? I mean, think about that. Don't save it all up. Practice now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, love is patient, love is kind, love is gentle. You know, it's not critical and fault-finding and judging and all this kind of stuff. So I want to encourage you today, just begin to take that journey in this lesson and say, you know what? I'm going to tell everybody the good that I think about them. And the things that where I may have difficulty with them, I'm just going to take that to the cross and ask God to bless them. Even my enemies, I'm going to bless. And even those who despitefully use me, I'm going to bless, because those truly are sons of God. You've just been listening to the highlights from VFN TV and the Dative Radio program, where we're keeping the conversation light. Listen or watch more programs and check out the VFN Torch at VFNTV.com. Don't forget about our VFN TV app, where no matter where you are, you can take the light with you and share it with your friends. We want to thank our sponsors and partners who make this program possible. Take the time and support our sponsors. You can locate them at VFNTV.com and select sponsors. If you'd like to become a sponsor or a partner, you can do so at VFNTV.com. VFN TV and the Dative Radio program, where we're keeping the conversation light.